So, we are learning Gemara Rosh Hashanah from the Mizrahi Bet Midrash in Melbourne, Australia. And we are on Kaf Vav Amud Aleph. And we are, according to Rabbi Asulan, at the words Abaya Omar, which is, you see where it begins to get wide, and you go up 3, 5, 7 lines. Third word from the end of the line is Abaya. And we're going back to the Mishnah. Let's quickly refresh with the Mishnah. We're at the top of the Amud that says, we're on Kaf Vav Amud Aleph. Did I say that? I think I did. Kol Hashofrot Kasherim Chutz Mishel Para. So the Tanakhama says all shofrot, all horns of animals are kosher, except that of a cow. And the Mishnah gives a reason why no cows. Mipnei shehu keren, because that's the horn of a cow is called a keren. It's not called a shofar. Amar Rabbi Yossi v'halo kol shofrot nikru keren. Rabbi Yossi disagrees and he says all shofrot are called keren. So you can't exclude the cow one just because that's called a keren. Shneamar b'meshech v'keren hayovel. With the drawing out of the keren of the yovel. And we'll see soon that yovel is a word for shofar, and keren is there referring to every type of shofar. Okay, so we've discussed reasons why we can't use the horn of a cow. Ulla had a long piece about Ein Kategor Na'aseh Sanigor, that if it's the accuser, it can't become the defender, and that applies inside the Bet Mikdash, not necessarily outside the Bet Mikdash. Abaya has a different approach altogether. And Abaya says, Abaya Omar, Hainu Tamayhu Derabanan. This is the reason of Tanakama. Shofar Omar Rachmana, Velo Shnayim Veshlosha Shofarot. It says one shofar in the Torah, not two or three shofarot. Vaha de para, and a cow's horn, Kevan de Kai, Gilde Gilde. It consists of shells of horn on top of shells. If you look at the construction of a cow, it looks like it's segmented, of a cow's horn, it looks like it's segmented, and each segment is like a separate shofar. Mitchaze kishnaim v'shlosha shofarot. It appears like two or three shofarot. So that's why, says Abaya, Tanakama says, you can't use a cow's horn, because it's like a multitude of shofarot. V'hatana, but how can that be the reason? We learned in the Mishnah, Mipnei Shehu Keren. The reason you can't use a cow's horn is because it's called a Keren. Nothing to do with it's made of shells. Ka'amar, that's what it says. So says Abaya, what the Mishnah means is Chada va'od Ka'amar. It means one reason and there's another reason. Chada, the Shofar Echad Omar Rachmana v'lo Shnayim v'shlosha Shofarot. One reason is because the Torah says one Shofar and not two or three Shofarot. The odd, and another reason, and that's the one mentioned in the Mishnah, Mipnei Shehu Keren, because it's called a Keren. Now, if the reason for Tanakama is you can't use a cow's horn because it's segmented, it's like lots of different shofarot, what about Rabbi Yossi, who says you can use a cow's horn? Amar lecha, so Rabbi Yossi Amar lecha, Rabbi Yossi will say to you, Dekamata shofar echad amar rachmana velo shlayim shlosha shofarot. Even, yes, he agrees, the Torah says, one shofar and not two or three shofarot. But, kevan de mitchabri achadadi chad hu. Since they are all joined together, the shells, the gildi of the cow's horn are joined together, it is one, it is not two or three, it is one, so it's still available to be used. Ukadamata mimneshu keren, kol hashofarot nami ikru keren. And now, since we're explaining, Abaya is saying there are two reasons in the Mishnah, one stated, one not stated. Rabbi Yossi replies to both of them. To the unstated reason, he says, yes, it's made of different shells, i.e. different segments, but they're all one, they're all joined together, so it's any one shofar. And to the other reason, the one that is stated in the Mishnah, where it says, Tanakama says, you can't use a cow's horn because it's called keren, says Rabbi Yossi, all shofarot are also called keren. Okay, so we're in the third wide line and the third word. Now we go into some etymology. And we say, my mashma dahai yuvla lishna dedachra hu. What is the source for the idea that this word yuvla, which is the Aramaic for yovel, it means a dachra, means a ram. Because the pasuk says, the one quoted in the Mishnah, b'meshech keren hayovel. So we learn that means you take a horn from a yovel, which means a ram. But how do we know that a yovel means a ram? Interesting. The implication is that when the Amoraim were discussing the words of the Mishnah, They weren't used to all aspects of the vocabulary of the Mishnah. And I say this as an introduction to what's coming next, because we're going to see a number of examples, some of which are really very perplexing, that the rabbis, who presumably were fluent in the language of the Mishnah, didn't know what some words meant. Maybe it's the passage of time, maybe it's a question of dialects, maybe it's a question of geography, but the Mishnah was put together with Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, but in subsequent generations, when the Amoraim, or even when the Tanaim were discussing the words of the Mishnah, sometimes they just weren't familiar with the vocabulary. So the word Yovel, we're told, is a Dachra, is about in Aramaic, which means ram, but how do we know? And the answer is, Tanya, we learned in a Braita, Amar Rabbi Akiva said, Keshehalachti la Arvia, when I went to Arabia, sounds like Rabbi Akiva was quite a traveler, Hayukarin la Dachra Yovla, I heard that they called rams by the word Yovla. So that's how we know that Yovel is the meaning of ram. So it's another interesting point that we, in having said that we're in doubt as to some of the translation of vocabulary in the Mishnah, we can find that if it's used in a certain place by other people, non-Jewish people, even speaking a different language, then that serves as some sort of support for our interpretation of the words in the Mishnah. And now, since we've started this process of talking about how words which are not understood become understood, we carry on with other examples. For Amar Rabbi Akiva, Keshehalachti leGalia, when I went to Gaul, which implies Rabbi Akiva was really quite a traveller. Hayukorin leNida Galmuda. So they called a woman who is menstruating as a Galmuda. What is a Galmuda? My Galmuda, what is meant by Galmuda? Gamula da miba'ala. Da is this one. Gamula is separated miba'ala from her husband. V'amar Rabbi Akiva shalachti la'afriki. Rabbi Akiva says, when I went to Africa, hayukorin lemea kashita, they called mea, which is a unit of currency, which is a sixth of a silver piece, I think, and they called it a kashita. Lemainav kamina, why do we need to know this? Lepirushe, to explain the pasuk, where Yaakov arrives in Shechem, and he buys it for mea kashita. Da'araita. It says in the Torah, mea kashita. We need to know what a kashita is. That's why we have this little story. We need to know it means mea danki. 100/6 of a unit. Amar Rebbe. Now we have some more stories. Keshehalachti lekarche hayam. Rebbe says, when I went to the villages, or the villages by the sea, hayukorin lemechira kira. They called the process of buying, they used the word kira. Lemainav kimina. Well, what's the halachic import of this understanding? Lepirushe, to explain the pasuk in the Torah where Yaakov refers to the Kever Machpela as Asher Kariti Li, which I bought for me. Amar Rabbi Shimon Lakish. Rabbi Shimon Lakish has his own story. Keshalachti Latchum Kan Nishara, when I went to the border of the place called Kan Nishara, Hayokarin Lakala Ninfi. They called a bride a Ninfi. Ulatanugol Shichvi. Oh, Sechvi, sorry. And they called a rooster by the word Sechvi. Lekala Ninfi. They called a Kala Ninfi. Mikra. What's the pasuk that gives rise to that word? Yafe Nof Masos Kala Aretz. The beautiful sight, well, that's the simple, that's literally what it means, brings joy to all the earth. It's talking about the redemption and the rebuilding of Yerushalayim. And Yafe Nof is actually a reference to Yerushalayim. But we're learning from this that the Nof, which is related to Ninfi, is related to Kala. That Yerushalayim is represented as a Kala, as a bride. Ula Tanagol Sechvi. Tanagol is called a Sechvi. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Yibayet Eimer Rav Yeshua Ben Lakish Maikra. Rav Yeshua says that Rav Yehuda says the name of Rav, and some say it's Rav Yeshua Ben Levi. Says, what's the pasuk that gives rise to calling a rooster by the word Sechvi? Mi sat batochot chokma. Or me nitan lesechvi bina, who has given to the smooth ones wisdom, and who has given to the sechvi understanding? The Gemara now explains the pasuk: misa betuchat hachma ela kalayot. Who gave wisdom to the betuchat? These are the kidneys. which historically and poetically were considered the seat of wisdom. Sounds a bit weird, but it's actually no weirder than thinking the heart is the seat of emotions. But it used to be that not just poetically the heart was the seat of emotions, as we all appreciate, but the kidneys were the seat of wisdom. So that's referred to in that pasuk, which comes from Yeshaya, I think, because they usually do. Iyov. So that's the first part of the pasuk, and the second part, oh, mi yatein lesechvi bina ze tanagol. That is a rooster. And of course, we are familiar with that because the first of Birchat HaShacha is Anotel Sechvi Vina, which is based on this pasuk. Hashem gives the rooster the understanding to know the difference between day or night, and that's what wakes us up. Either a rooster or an alarm clock or a sense of the difference between day and night. Okay, more stories. Levi Ikla Lahahu Atra. Levi came to that place. Ata Gavra Lakme. And a man came before him, Amar Le, and he said to him, Kava'an pauni, so-and-so has kava'an me. But and lo have a yada, my ka'amar. And Levi didn't know what he was talking about, because he didn't know what kava'an meant. My ka'amar le, what he said to him. Ata sha'il beit midrasha. So Levi went to, presumably the local beit midrash, where they were familiar with the local dialect. And amru le, they said to him, the people in the beit midrash, they said to him, gazlan amar lacha. He was saying to you that he'd been robbed. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, Hayakver Adam Elokim. Does man rob God? So that's what it meant, but he didn't know what Kava'an meant, but now he does. Amale Rava mi Baranish la Rav Ashi. Rava from Baranish said to Rav Ashi, I have hatam. If I had been there, have aminale, I would have said to him, Chehi Kava'acha. How did he cover you? But my kava acha, with what did he cover you? But amai kava acha, and why did he cover you? Umimela have a yadana, and from the conversation I would have worked it out. Very clever idea. If you don't know what the word means, you just sort of bring it out of the conversation and work it out from people's reactions, and then you'll work it out what it means. Like people who don't know people's names, I'm usually in that category, so I sort of talk and I try and find something that might give me a clue as to who they are, and sometimes it works and sometimes it fails miserably. But anyway, that's what Rava mi Baranish suggested. And the reason Levi didn't do it, Savar milta di isura ka amarle. Levi thought that he was referring to some forbidden act that had been done to him, probably of a intimate nature, which he didn't think it was appropriate to ask too many questions about. Okay, more stories. Lo hava yada rabbanan mai sirugim. So the rabbis, and we'll see who they were in a moment, didn't know what sirugin meant. It occurs in the Mishnah. It occurs in the Mishnah in the context of, if you read the Megillah sirugin, then you're not yotze, you haven't fulfilled your obligation. The problem was they didn't know what sirugin meant. Shema'uhu la'amta debei Rebbe. They heard the maidservant of Rebbe's house. Da'chazit nuhu rabbanan da'have alai piske piske. She saw that the rabbis were coming into Rebbe's house bit by bit. Amra lahu, and she said to them, Ad matai atem nichnasim sirugin sirugin. For how long are you going to come in bit by bit? So she was cross because they were delaying the start of the shiur because they weren't arriving on time. And she told them off. And she said, you're coming in sirugin, sirugin. So they learnt that sirugin means bit by bit, just doing a little bit here and a little bit there. What's fascinating is these are rabbis of the Mishnah. They're the colleagues, they're the Talmidim of Rebbe at the time of the compilation of the Mishnah. And yet even then, they didn't know what words in the Mishnah meant. That's amazing thing number one. Amazing thing number two is that the maidservant in Rebbe's house spoke to them in such a, what might seem a chutzpahdik way, to tell them they were coming in too slowly. And apparently that was an appropriate thing to do. Maybe because that was the relationship they had with the maidservant in Rebbe's house. Or maybe because for the sake of Talmud Torah, she was able to tell them off. And they listened to what she had to say, and they worked out what the words meant. More examples. Lo hava yada rabbanan by chalaglugot. They didn't know what this type of species called chalaglugot was. Yomachada shamawa la amta debei Rebbe. One day they heard the maidservant of Rebbe, again this same lady, who obviously was very fluent in languages, the chazit lahahu gavra. She saw a man, Deka Mavader Parparchina, that was separating out the Parparchina, which apparently is pulsane. And I don't know what that is, but it's a vegetable. Amrale, she said to him, Ad Mataya Tamafaza Chalaglugcha. Until how long are you going to spend separating out your Chalaglugcha? And that's how Chazal, the rabbis, knew what that word meant. Next case, Lo Hava Yada Rabbanan Mai Salsula. They didn't know what Salsula meant. The pasuk, in the pasuk, Salsula V'tora Mamecha. You will, after you're doing some silsul, you will be elevated. But they didn't know what the word meant. Now, this isn't a Mishnah, this is a pasuk in Mishlei. Yom Echad Shamua La'amta Debei Rabbi. They one day they heard the maidservant of Rabbi's house. Da'ave Amru La'ahu Gavra. She said to this man, Da'avu Kama Hapech Basare. He was playing with his hair, curling his hair. Amrulay, she said to him, Ad Mataya Ta Masalsel Basarech. How long are you going to spend Masalsel in your hair? And that's how they knew it meant curling. Lo Hava Yadei Rabbanan Mai V'tatite. The rabbis didn't know what that meant, that word, which is a pasuk from Yeshaya, V'tatite B'matata. Do you do something with a matata? They didn't know what it meant. Hashmed. It's the matate of destruction. Yom Echad, one day, Shemua la'amta de Rabbi, they heard the maidservant of Rabbi's house, Tahavat Amra la'chaverta, she would say to her colleague, another servant, Shakule tatate, take a, and it was obvious from context, that she was saying, take a broom, vatate, and sweep, beta, the house. So now they understood what the pasuk in Yeshaya meant. It meant you will be swept away by the broom of destruction. Next case. Lo havi yadarabban and my hishlach al Hashem yahavcha. They didn't know what was meant in the pasuk in Tehillim that says, cast on Hashem your yahev. Vahu yachal lecha, and he will sustain you. Amar Rabba bar Rachana, yom echad have azlina v'hade hahutaye. So Rabba bar Rav Chana answers the mystery by saying, I was once going behind this Arab person, have a darina tuna, and he was carrying a burden, a bundle, for Amar Li, and he said to me, I was carrying the burden, and this Ta'e, this Arab, Amar Li, said to me, Shakul Yahavcha, let me take your Yahavch, the Shade Gamlai, and I'll put it on my camel. From which we learn that Yahav is a burden, something that you carry. So the pasuk in Tehillim says, cast your burden on Hashem and he will sustain you. Okay, we have finished that little digression into etymology. And to me, it's not just the meaning of the words, but much more interesting is how they worked out the meaning of the words. Because other people use these words from Tanakh and from the Mishnah that even the Tanaim and the Amoraim didn't know.
These maid servants of the rabbin that they worked for, they would have had some sort of credibility. Had they just been in the marketplace, had they heard the words?
Well, I'm not sure, because the other examples were, Rabbi Akiva just went to Africa and walked around and heard people say it. He went to Gaul and he heard people say it.
That's Rabbi Akiva holding. These are the maids of...
Yeah, but where did Rabbi Akiva get the message from? From some person. Uh-huh. Okay? So I'm not sure if it was because she was the maidservant of Rabbi that gave her the credibility. I don't know. I've understood that as they were gathered in Rabbi's house because that's where they gathered and that's where they happened to hear her talking. But there may be more to it. Right. This Gemara applies here and it comes up somewhere else as well. That the Amta de Rebbe, the Beit Rebbe, was the one who was this master linguist.
Amazing.
The next Mishnah says, Shofar Shor Rosh Hashanah. By the way, the previous Mishnah, and now onwards, we've only got eight and a half pages left, but Masechet Rosh Hashanah is now finally talking about things relevant to Rosh Hashanah. Because we've had a lot of other things which were all fascinating, but not actually relevant to Rosh Hashanah, but now we're stuck on Rosh Hashanah. And we learn, Shofar shel Rosh Hashanah shel Ya'al Pashut. The shofar of Rosh Hashanah comes from a wild goat, and it's straight. So we will qualify this, as we'll see very soon, but the Tanakhama is saying, you have one straight long horn. Upiv Metzupa Zahav. and its mouth is coated in gold. I'll tell you now, we're talking about the shofar that's used in the Bet Mikdash. The one we use would not be coated in gold. Ushtei chatzatzrot min hatzadidim. And there were two trumpets on the side. So you had trumpet, shofar, trumpet. And that's how they blew in the Bet Mikdash. Shofar ma'arich v'hatzatzrot mekatzrot. And the shofar blows for a long time, and the trumpets blow for a short time. Shem mitzvah tayom b'shofar. Because the mitzvah of the day is to blow the shofar. Ubataniot. Now there was another time when they blew, and that was on fast days. And on the fast days, b'shel zacharim, kafufim. They had a male ram's horn, and it was a twisty-turny bent one, not a straight one. Upihen mitzupa kesef. And its mouth, or their mouths actually, was covered in silver. Ushtei chatzotrot be'emtza. And there were two trumpets in the middle. So what does it mean in the middle? How can you be in the middle of a shofar? So there were two shofrot. And that, I've just noticed, is probably why it's pihen mitzupa kesef. So there were two shofrot. So you had shofar, trumpet, trumpet, shofar. So the trumpets were in the middle. A shofar mekatzer, and the shofar was blown for a short time, for chatzotrot ma'arichot. And then the trumpets are blown for a long time. Shem mitzvah tayom b'chatzotrot. Because the mitzvah of the day is to blow the trumpets. We're talking about the trumpets which are referred to in Perek Yud of Bamidbar, where Moshe makes trumpets, which are to be blown on days of trouble, i.e. on fast days. Continues the Mishnah. Shaveh ha-yovel l'Rosh Hashanah l'tekiah u'l'brachot. So the yovel is the jubilee year. And we know that the shofar was blown on Yom Kippur of the jubilee year. But in fact, it's more than that. On the Yom Kippur of the jubilee year, the davening would be like our davening on Rosh Hashanah. Namely, you blow the shofar, and also you have the extra brachot of Malchiyot, Zichronot, and Shofrot. They would be added into the Amidah on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur of the Yovel year. So the Mishnah says, Shavah ha-Yovel Rosh Hashanah, le-tekiah u-le-brachot. The Yovel is the same as Rosh Hashanah in regards to the blowing and to the blessings. Rabbi Yehuda Amer, no, it's not the same. But Rosh Hashanah tokim b'shal zacharim, u-be-yovelot, b'shal ya'alim. On Rosh Hashanah, you blow with male ram's horns, and on Yom Kippur of the Yovel year, you blow with a wild goat's horn. Amar Rabbi Levi, mitzvah shal Rosh Hashanah v'shal Yom Kippurim b'kafufim. So we're going to see different opinions to what we saw in the Mishnah. Rabbi Levi says that you use a shofar on Rosh Hashanah and on Yom Kippur, that's for a Yovel, with a bent shofar. V'shal kol hashanah b'pshutim. But for the rest of the year, i.e. when you blow on a fast day, you have a straight shofar. That is Rabbi Levi's opinion. V'hatnan, but we learned in the Mishnah, shofar shal Rosh Hashanah shal yael, that the shofar of Rosh Hashanah in yael pashut is a straight one of a goat. So how does Rabbi Levi say the mitzvah Rosh Hashanah is to use a bent one? Huda amar ki haytana. And the answer is he's following the following Tana. Levi is not a Tana, he's an Amora. So he has to have a Tana to base his opinion on if he's going to disagree with the Mishnah. The Tanya, we've learned in a Braisa, and here comes the alternative Tanaitic source. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, for Rosh Hashanah, Hayutokim B'Shal Zacharim Kefufin. Rabbi Yehuda says, on Rosh Hashanah they would blow with a male ram's horn which was bent. Ubi Yovelot B'Shal Ya'alim. And on Yovel they would use a goat's horn. And so Rabbi Levi is following Rabbi Yehuda. In which case, says the Gemara, V'leima hilchata ka Rabbi Yehuda. Why don't we just say, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? And the answer is, Iyamrat hilchata ka Rabbi Yehuda. If Levi had said, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, hava amina afilu shel yovel nami ka Rabbi Yehuda, sevir alei. Then that you might have thought that Levi held like Rabbi Yehuda also for a yovel. Now, by Yovel, Rabbi Yehuda said that you use a Ya'el, the goat, the horn of a goat. But we saw that Levi actually said, for both Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you use a kafufin, one that is bent. So what we turns out is Levi holds like Rabbi Yehuda on Rosh Hashanah, but not like Rabbi Yehuda on Yom Kippur, which is why he doesn't say the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. So Kamash Malan, he comes to teach us that on Yom Kippur of a Yovel, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, But rather, on both days, you use a bent shofar, which is not exactly like the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda in Yom Kippur, even though it is like the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda on Rosh Hashanah. But Maika Mafligi, what exactly are they arguing about? And we're talking about Tanakama in our Mishnah, who says on Rosh Hashanah you use a Ya'el Pashut, a straight shofar, and the opinion of Levi, which is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who says we use a bent shofar for Rosh Hashanah. What is the argument about? Ma'asavah b'Rosh Hashanah kama dekayif inishtate tefei ma'alei. Ma'asavah, the Rabbi Yehuda holds, that the more that a person bends their mind, the more one subjugates oneself and looks down on Rosh Hashanah, the better. Ubiyom Kippurim, but when it's Yom Kippur, and we're talking about the Yovel, when you're proclaiming liberty throughout the land, and all the slaves go home, kama depashit inishtate tefei ma'ale. It's better to have a straight, upward-looking, forward-looking vision for this momentous day of change and liberation, and that's why it's appropriate to use a straight shofar. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Umasavar, and the other opinion, which is in the Mishnah, Barosh Hashanah kamada pashit inishtate tefei ma'ale. It's better for a person to have a straight look, a straight mind, when he comes on Rosh Hashanah. Ubatanit, but the first Mishnah said that in the rest of the year on a Tanit, we use a curly shofar. Kama tekayit inishtate tefei ma'ale. On a Tanit, when you're asking for mercy, it's certainly better to be more bent. If I can just abstract out of that, in terms of Rosh Hashanah, Rabbi Yehuda says you use a bent shofar, and Tanakama says you use a straight shofar. And Rabbi Yehuda, the way we just explained it, says it's better when you daven on Rosh Hashanah to feel low and humble and look down and be bent, and Tanakama feels it's better to have a straight opinion, a straightforward, clear mind when you daven on Rosh Hashanah. And of course, they're both valid. And I think there's a machloket really about what are we davening for? What's the essence of our davening? What's our style of davening? Is it to subjugate ourselves, to feel very lowly about ourselves? Or is it to feel very empowered and sort of lofty and mighty about the future? And I think the answer is it's a bit of both, but we paskan like Rabbi Yehuda. Our shofar on Rosh Hashanah is bent. And in conclusion, our tefillah should be bent as well. I mean, the way we see ourselves when we're davening should be bent. So now we turn to the next Amud, which is Kaf Zayin Amud Aleph, and we say the next part of the Mishnah, Upiv Metzupa Zahav, the mouth of the shofar is covered in gold. Vahatanya, but we've learned in a Braisa, Sipua Zahav, B'makom Hanachat Piv Pasul. If you put gold on the place where you place your mouth, then it's Pasul, because you have to be blowing the shofar and not blowing gold. So how does it, can it be that the Mishnah says the mouth of the shofar was covered in gold? And the answer is, Shalo bimkom hamanachat piv kasher. If you put the gold where it's not the place, I'm sorry, this is still the Braisa. The Braisa says, if you put the gold where the mouth goes, it's posel. If you put the gold not in the place where the mouth goes, it's kasher. Amar Abaya reconciles that Braisa with our Mishnah, Kitanan, when we learn the Mishnah, Nami Matnitin Shalobim Kom Hanachat Piv Tanan. The Mishnah also said when you cover it in gold, even though it said you cover the mouth with gold, that's not the part where you put the mouth. So presumably it's like a little bit further along the shofar. You put a ring of gold, but where your mouth goes, you still have just shofar and not gold. The Mishnah said, Vishtei Chatzotrot Minat Sadadim. There were two trumpets on either sides of the shofar. Now, the Gemara asks, and they all blew. The shofar blew for longer, but they all blew at the beginning. And the Gemara says, "V'trei kale mishtamai." How can you hear two different voices? Now, you have to hear the shofar. So while the trumpets are blowing at the same time, you're not going to be able to hear the shofar, because you normally can't hear two voices at once. How do I know that? Because we learned in a brayta. V'hatanya, zachor v'shamar v'dibo echad ne'emro. Hashem said, when he gave the Aseret HaDibrot, the word Zachor, and he said the word Shamor, simultaneously. Masha'ein ha'peh yachol ledaber, the normal person can't say two words at the same time. Ve'ein ha'ozen yachala lishmoa, and the ear cannot hear. So an ear cannot hear two things at once. If you hear somebody saying Shamo and somebody saying Zachar, you just hear a mishmash. And if you hear a trumpet blowing and a shofar blowing, you don't hear either of them distinctly. Lekach, therefore, says the Gemara, ma'arich b'shofar. That's why we blow the shofar longer. So at least once the trumpets have stopped, you will hear the shofar. But the problem with that is, you'll hear the end of the shofar note, you won't hear the beginning of the shofar note. So the Gemara says, lemeimra, does that mean to say, dechi shama sof tekiya below techilat tekiya, yatsa, that if you hear the end of the blowing, but you don't hear the beginning, you're still yotze? Mm. That seems to be implied, because the trumpets were blowing at the beginning of the shofar, but not at the end. Umimela techilat tekiya below sof tekiya yatsa. And then, if it's true that you're yotze, you fulfilled your obligation by hearing the end of the shofar note, then does that also imply, or rather, it does imply, that you're yotze if you hear the beginning of the shofar note, but not the end of the shofar note? But we have a problem. Toshma, come and listen. We're going to try and resolve this. And here's our source, our text that we try to bring as a proof. Taka berishona umeshech b'shnia kishtayim. Okay, if you have to blow, and we'll see this later, a teruah note, a broken note, with a tekiah before it and a tekiah after it, and you do that three times. Now, because of various doubts about what that teruah note sounds like, we go from nine notes, tekiah, teruah, tekiah, to 40, to 100. We'll see how we get there later. But basically, you have a tekiah, then you have a broken note, which just for the sake of discussion, I'll call a teruah. Then you have a tekiah. That's the first trio. Then you do another trio with another tekiah, another teruah, another tekiah. Then you do a third teruah. A third row. But in particular, you have two tekiahs in a row. Again, tekiah, teruah, tekiah, followed immediately by another tekiah, teruah, tekiah. So the writer is talking about somebody who blew for the first tekiah, and he carried on blowing, and it led into the second, and it was as long as two. So the tekiah followed by tekiah was actually blown as one long tekiah. Ein biado ela achat. And the halacha is, if you do that, it only counts as one tekiah, not two. But am I? Why? Tisaleit lebatarte. It should count as two. Because you've got one long tekiah, so the first bit is like one tekiah where you hear the beginning, but it doesn't have an end, which we said before sounds like it's okay. And the second half is like the end of a tekiah without the beginning. And we said before, that's okay. And yet the Brisa says it's not. So that sounds like a refutation of the idea that the beginning without the end or the end without the beginning is okay. But no, it's not actually. It's for a different reason. Because the Gemara says, Pasuke tekiah ta mehadadi lo paskinan. We don't cut the tekiah from each other. So the reason that if you blew one tekiah long enough for two, it counts as one, not as two, is because you can't take one note and cut it into two. But we haven't, therefore, commented on whether it is true to say that if you did hear the beginning of a note but not the end, or the end of a note but not the beginning, whether that counts or not. But the example we just gave, it doesn't work, but for a different reason, because you can't take one double-length tekiah and cut it into two single-length tekiahs. Toshma. Okay, another proof. Hatokea letoch habor. You blow the shofar into a pit, or letoch hadut, or into a cistern, or letoch pitam, into a big barrel. And the problem there is you're not going to hear the note of the shofar, you're going to hear an echo. And an echo is not the same as hearing the shofar. Just by the way, this is the source for discussion about whether you can hear the shofar over a microphone or over a radio. Is that the same as hearing the original note of the shofar? And then, originally, by the way, since I mentioned it, people thought it was a good analogy, and then they realized it wasn't. Because when you hear an echo, it's the sound waves bouncing off something. But when you hear the shofar, shofar's not actually the best example, but making a bracha is a very good example. When you hear the word bracha over a amplifier, you're not actually hearing the original sound. You're hearing that sound was then broken up electronically and then recreated electronically, so you're not actually hearing the original sound. Anyway, this is the idea, the starting point for discussion about microphones, etc. So if you blow the shofar into a pit or similar, you're going to hear the echo. The Mishnah says, "In kol shofar shema yatsa," if you hear the voice of the shofar, you're yotze. "V'im kol havara shema lo yatsa," but if you hear the voice of the echo, you're not yotze. You haven't fulfilled your obligation. But the Gemara says, "Amai lipuk v'techila takia mikmei dile arvev kala." If you blow into a pit and you hear an echo, the way it will work is you won't hear the echo immediately. There'll be a very short time delay between before you hear the echo. That's because of the extra journey that the sound waves have to pass to get to the edge of the pit and bounce off it. So for that short duration, you will hear the unimpeded voice of the shofar itself. So you will hear the beginning of the shofar note before it gets mixed up with the echo note. So why aren't you yotze with the beginning of the shofar note? And that's a good question, and you're not. So we go back to our shofar being blown together with the trumpets. So you hear the end of the shofar note, but you don't hear the beginning of the shofar note because the trumpets are at the same time. So how can that work if it doesn't work in the case of the shofar mixed up with the echo? So the answer, we now change our position. Elatarte kale mechad gavra lo mishtamei. You can't hear two sounds from one person, like when a Kadosh Baruch Hu says Shava Vazacha, that can't normally be done. But mitrei gavre mishtamei, you can hear the two voices when they're said from two different people. So when one person's blowing a trumpet and one person's blowing a shofar, you do hear the sound of the shofar from beginning to end. So it turns out you're yotze when you hear the shofar and the trumpets because you do hear the shofar. Because the trumpet being blown by somebody else doesn't stop you hearing the shofar. So the whole idea that you can be yotze by just hearing the end of the note is irrelevant because that's not what's happening. You are hearing the whole shofar blow from beginning to end because you can distinguish it from the trumpet being blown by somebody else. But then the Gemara questions that. Is it true you can hear when two different people are talking or singing or blowing a shofar at the same time? V'hatanya. But we've learnt in a brisa. But Torah echad kore ve'echad mitargem ubilvad shelo yehu shnayim mitargemim. Okay, it used to be that when the Torah was laid in shul, after each verse, a mitargem would translate it into Aramaic. Interestingly enough, that's in the Shulchan Aruch, and there's no logical reason why we don't follow it, but we don't, except Teimanim. Teimanim still have the minhag, it's not the minhag, it's halacha, of the laning, which takes a long time in the Teimani shul, because each pasuk is translated into Aramaic. In fact, in some Teimani shuls, they're very machmir, and they translate it into Aramaic, and then into Arabic. Anyway, the halacha is, you have somebody reading the Torah, and then somebody reading the translation, but you can't have two meturgamim, two translators, because, well, you can't have them. But, well, the implication is, because you won't be able to hear the two voices, which seems to contradict what we just said, which said you can hear two different voices, you can hear a shofar and a trumpet. So why does the halacha require you not to have two meturgamim? Two translators of the Torah. V'halo dami elo sefer. Well, actually, it's not a good comparison. But there's a better comparison. Because that Mishnah that talks about you can't have two meturgamim has a sefer, has a later part of the Mishnah. And the later part, that's the sefer, says, V'halel uba megillah afilo asara korin. When it comes to reading Halel or reading the Megillah, even 10 people can say it at once, and you will hear it. So it turns out that when you have two people doing the translation, you won't be able to make out the distinct words. But if you have even 10 people doing Hallel or reading the Megillah, you will be able to hear. Alma kevan de chaviv yahiv date. And the reason is because if you're listening to something which is dear to you, like Hallel or like a Megillah, you will pay attention. So what are we talking about? So it turns out that if you have two people reading the Targum, reading the translation of the Torah, you won't be able to make out the sounds because you're not so interested in the Aramaic translation of the Torah. But if you have 10 people singing Hallel, everyone loves Hallel. If you have 10 people reading the Megillah, everyone wants to hear the story of the Megillah, you will be able to hear the individual words. It's an interesting point, by the way, because this is a big discussion about women singing. Can you have a woman singing for men? I won't give the answer to that because it's a big discussion. Can you have two women singing for men? Yeah, that's all okay, because you can't hear two distinct voices. Ah, but if it's chaviv, if it's dear, then you can hear the two voices. And since the whole problem of women singing might be because the men are particularly keen to hear what they have to sing, and that could lead to other ideas, then the two women singing is not going to help, because that's going to be something that the men are going to listen intently to and will hear the individual women singing. Anyway, that's all part of the discussion. And there's much more to it before you get to the conclusion. But so Hallel and Megillah are things that people want to listen to. Hachinami kevan de chaviv yehev date. Here also, since the sound of the shofar is dear, you will pay attention to it. Vishama, and you will hear it. So we go back to where we started. There's no problem at all with the shofar being accompanied by the trumpets, because the sound of the shofar is dear. So one will listen carefully to it, and one will hear the sound of the shofar. In which case, Eila lama ma'arich b'shofar, so why do we elongate the sound of the shofar? Why don't we just have the shofar and the trumpets playing for the same duration, and we'll hear them clearly? And the answer is, leida she'mitzvat hayom b'shofar, to tell you that the mitzvah of the day is to hear the shofar. That's why the shofar lasts longer than the trumpets. Not because you wouldn't be able to hear the sound of the shofar or be yotze with the sound of the shofar. You would. We've just concluded that. But nevertheless, we blow the shofar for longer to tell people that mitzvah tayom b'shofar. The mitzvah of the day is with the shofar. And there we will conclude.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure. Let's just double check one thing. Where do we learn, with example of the shofar